Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick here with co-host Dan Reese for this week's By the Numbers. The last of the regular season. It's been a lot of fun doing these shows from you, Dan. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. What a crazy season. No more appropriate way, I guess, to end it than another crazy game, you know, right down to the wire and overtime. So thought they had a pretty good chance, but another rough loss to end the season. But I'm doing good. It was an exciting season for sure.
Yeah, it started off well. We complained about all the heartbreak wins, and then we found out that heartbreak losses are a lot worse than heartbreak wins, and we had plenty of that down the stretch. Let's see. I'll start this off. We'll go with 44%. That's the ample time and space percentage for Tyler Huntley in this game. Now, you wouldn't think that with the Steelers' pass rush and how effective they seem to be in this game. Hayward certainly had some push on the pocket, and Watt had what seemed to be a pretty big game. But they gave Huntley ATS on 15 of 34 plays that resulted in a pass or sack, 6.1 yards per play on those plays, but with two interceptions. So 6.1 yards per play is not good for when you have ample time and space, but two interceptions is really bad for 15 plays, obviously, of any type. The offensive line held up very well in this game. I mean, particularly the interior offensive line at right tackle, they had a decent game. Villanueva wasn't the worst he's been this year, certainly by any measure. I think, you know, the Lamar Huntley debates that we've seen started by some very foolish people about is Huntley greater than Lamar, you know, is that the big elephant in the room is that Huntley is really the better player and they're going to have to replace Lamar. I think the real question should shift now to, is Huntley the backup quarterback the Ravens really need? Or with him entering year three next year, do they need to seriously consider reloading at backup quarterback?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think we've seen that he did fine when teams weren't planning for him. But as soon as, you know, teams started to game plan for him, which is the case for a lot of backup quarterbacks, it's a lot more difficult. And he just wasn't able to, you know, step it up and kind of make the difference. You know, I think it's really hard because spending on backup quarterbacks is, if you don't use them, then it's kind of waste, but if you need them, then you really want a good one. So
yeah, I mean, one of the things that has been brought up, and I wonder how the Ravens react to it, there's a lot of teams that need quarterbacks out there. I don't think that Huntley did anything this year to make him be the exceptional type of quarterback that anybody wants as their number one, but you know, maybe another team has a big injury or we get to a point. I mean, do you go ahead and entertain offers for Huntley at this point, given where he is along the four-year declining option value? The four-year declining value option, mm-hmm. Or do you say no? Nah, I'm just not going to do that this year. We could have the same problem with Lamar. We don't want to spend a draft pick to pick up a developmental guy, and then also be at the start of that process.
Yeah, I think it would depend on you know what they're offering. But if it was anything decent, I think you have to strongly consider it because you know the difference between him and another backup may not be significant, and you know the draft value, there's only limited amount of it, so it's a very valuable commodity. So all right, my first numbers are -0.24 and -0.06. that's the EPA per play for week 18 for the Ravens and Steelers, so both negative expected points added per play. So that is not good, as mm-hmm. you could tell from the game. 52 out of the 272 games this season, just a little bit under 20%, had negative EPA for both teams this year. So, you would kind of think of one of four options, right? Both positive, mm-hmm. both negative, or the two different combinations. So a little bit below the 25% there, has both negative. Out of the 52 of those games with both negative, five of them were Ravens games, which is pretty remarkable. Week 10 with Miami, week 11 with Chicago, both of the Cleveland games and then week 18 with Pittsburgh. So it's pretty interesting, both, I guess, because Baltimore's offense struggled some this season, and then but their defense was playing decent in a lot of games. So so I thought that was kind of interesting that they had above their share of games with both negative. Overall this season, the Ravens offense was 19th with a 0.005 EPA per play. And amazingly enough, the Ravens defense was all the way down at 27th with 0.07 EPA allowed per play. So their defense just really, really struggled on an EPA basis, and their offense was just okay. So,
okay. So that game at Miami is kind of like the start of the downfall of the 2021 Ravens. And in the games since then, how many positive EPA on offense games did the Ravens have? Do you have that number?
I don't. Not very many, I would guess. Yeah. I wouldn't think many without Lamar were positive. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's one or two.
Right. Okay, fair enough. I didn't prepare for that. Okay, well, let's move on. I've got 115.6 and 12.6%. 115.6 is the passer rating against Patrick Queen this year. And that's per Pro Football Reference. It's up from 104.4 in 2020. We know he was very bad last year. You know, it's sad to say he did not really take a step forward as a pass defender in this last year. The 12.6% is the missed tackle rate per Pro Football Reference. That is actually down from 16.5% in 2020. It's still bad for an inside linebacker. You can't miss 10% of your tackles as an inside linebacker. That's too many. I think it's fair to say, and it's something we postulated on the show regularly, is that positional coaching is needed this offseason for Patrick Queen. So I'm gonna give you four alternatives on things Patrick Queen could get better at. And I want you to pick one in terms of which do you think is the most important.
All right.
One is to become a better block shedder, which I think has been a problem. One is to cut his – number two is to cut his missed tackle rate in half. So you're not going to cut it to zero, but if he could cut it to half, he'd be, you know, probably in the top half of inside linebackers if he would do that instead of being one of the worst. The third, a better understanding and adherence to coverage responsibilities. So it doesn't become necessarily a player who understands what's going behind him, but he reacts a little quicker to the running back moving to the outside. If it's his guy, he knows his zone responsibilities a little better. Those couple of things. And the fourth is a better ability to read the quarterback and possible route combinations off the line of scrimmage. So this is going to improve his ability to play the ball behind him and get in the lane well to make life more difficult on quarterbacks. Of those four, which do you think would be the most valuable?
If I could have him focus on one, I think it'd probably be the better block shedding. That'd be the one I think he could focus on and actually get better at. I think the coverage ones you can get around more with coaching, with personnel grouping.
Substitution.
Yeah, exactly. I think also that's just a really, really hard one for a person to just get better at. And I think the missed tackle one, I think a lot of his missed tackles, well, I think it's a mixed bag. I think some of them he's just going too fast or takes the wrong angles and just gets, you know, off balance. But then some of them he's going, you know, are behind the line of scrimmage or I know what you've talked about is like good missed tackles, you know, or non-bad missed tackles, you know. And so, you know, limiting the missed tackles, I think it's more about his game speed and you know, and slowing down a little bit for those missed tackles. So I think the better block shedding will get him in position and help the run game a ton.
Okay, I think that's a good one. I think that's a good choice. Of course, I thought because of EPA numbers and the way that run numbers tend to be negative, that you would be in favor of one of the passing ones. But I know how you go by that a little bit. Anyway,
yeah.
The one thing I really am going to be upset if it happens, if he shows up at camp and he's done nothing this offseason other than to just go through his normal workout, I think it will really be a wasted offseason. And all the excuses are over for Patrick Queen at this point. He's got to get better as a football player. Okay, he was new to the position. He's not anymore. What did he do this last offseason to get better? And he better have an answer for that. It better not be, well, you know, I played some video games and I went out to clubs and I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, I think it is going to be a huge offseason for him. And I think you can really see the games when he is either, whether it's focus, preparation, got a limited assignment, whatever it is. But there are, it's amazing between the night and day performances of his. Like even late in the season, he had a one or two of them where he just seemed lost again, or it was too, going too fast for him. And it's just like, so it wasn't like, okay, we all of a sudden broke through the wall and we're fine now. He had a regression again. And that's what's worrisome to me is that, you know, it is a mental thing that he's going to have to work on, I think, a lot. So, all right, jumping to my next one is 4.31 rush yards over expected for Latavius Murray in week 18. Where in the world did this come from for Latavius
Murray? That's per attempt, right?
As per attempt, yes. 4.31 is unbelievable for Latavius Murray. Second highest in week 18 behind only Melvin Gordon. And it's amazing because he faced 8+ men in the box, 50% of his runs. So this defense was not messing around. They were stopping the run, and he was still able to run, which, you know, that's all taken into consideration in the rush yards over expected. So, you know, with the heavy box is really limited, and he was able to succeed. His efficiency by Next Gen was 2.19, which is the lowest in week 18. Efficiency is the number of yards run per yard gain. So basically he was only running a little bit over two yards to gain a
straight
yard
ahead.
So he wasn't messing around, just straight ahead. And
that is from the handoff, right? So it includes his backfield run length as well.
Oh yeah. Yeah. If you're putzing around in the backfield or whatever, bouncing around. Yeah. All those yards count against it. So it's really like I got the ball, I ran forward and hit the hole. And you know, that's what he's done all year, but I don't know whether it was better blocking, you know, better break, you know, a little time off, get the fresh legs again, or what it was, or Pittsburgh Steelers' bad defense, run defense, or maybe a combination of all three. This is what we were hoping, or I was hoping for all season with Latavius Murray. And it was really an amazing performance. Unfortunately, not quite enough, but a really impressive performance at the end of the season. So
I think you nailed it in terms of a couple things here. I think it really was the offensive line that was providing an exceptional game. And some of the weaknesses of the Pittsburgh Steelers in run defense really showed up. Devin Bush has had a crappy year, and he really played like hell on Sunday. The other guy, Spillane, their other inside linebacker, wasn't of any use at all on that touchdown run. And the other guy who really did not secure his part of the back end on two of the four 20-plus yard runs, I believe it was two of the four anyway, is Fitzpatrick. And, you know, he's a superstar, but just wasn't in the right place. He gambled and was out of position on those plays. Okay, I've got some Latavius Murray-related numbers. 41 and 20.09. The 46-yard touchdown run by Latavius Murray was 41 yards over expectation. So 4.1 per play. All he had was about 16 carries, right? So 15, 16 carries. So this was about two-thirds of his yards over expectation, right on the money, right? So is the best run for any Raven in 2021. In fact, I looked at the top five, and the bottom end of the top five for the whole year was about 43 yards. So this is probably in the top eight or so, at least, for the entire league wide this year. Now, one of the things looking at that run I noticed was he was absolutely loping. I mean, it wasn't a sprint. It was I'm coming down the stretch of the marathon, you know, and I'm going to cruise to the wire and, you know, take my victory lap and put my arms up. And I mean, he wasn't running very fast. Well, AWS comes out with their top speed numbers, 20.09 for Latavius Murray during that run. Now, I can do a little bit of by hand timing, and I can tell you when he got to the line of scrimmage using the thing, and I didn't do it yet, but I'm going to. And you know, yards and that distance, and hey, you and I are actuaries, we're actually able to calculate that in terms of miles per hour, convert it. There is no way he was anywhere close to 20.09 for the average over that whole distance. He might have been 20.09 for like consecutive 10-second measurements about near the beginning of the run, but that entire run, I will post that in Twitter, what his thing was. I was joking, and it's not fair, but that his top speed was more like 15 or 16 miles per hour. But you know, it's one of these things. If you know the AWS numbers, they don't vary that much by running back. Mm-hmm. You know, but you can get up to about 22 for the top guys, and I would think you see plenty of 18s for running backs who were on the slower side. And Murray to be 15 or 16 is just being unfair. But he was very much taking it easy for the last 20 or 30 yards of that run.
Yeah, which is probably good. If he had to full out sprint, I'm not sure it would be the same success of the run. But yeah, it was pretty wild. You know, he's not the speedster, but he is a different build for sure. Got some long, you know, long build for sure. So
what's your, give me an over under on the probability. I'll just give you a probability that he'll be back in 2022 for the Ravens.
Oh, zero. I have five, maybe, just to not have zero. Very, very low. I don't think any of the veteran backs will be. Maybe they'll be back for camp, but I don't think they'll make the 53.
Okay, in complete agreement, no wager.
All right. Next number, 14.6%. This was the difference in win probability for the Steelers if they went for it on 4th and inches, tied 13-13 with 44 seconds left at their own 44. The win probability if they went for it would be 54.7%. The win probability if they punted was 40.1%. Per Next Gen Stats, this was the most suboptimal decision to punt since they've been paying attention to it. It was the worst decision. Yep, worst decision to punt.
I was absolutely shocked by the decision. I didn't even really consider it a good result at the moment it happened that he'd been stopped a half yard short. I thought, oh shit, they're going to run the clock out. This is bad. And then all of a sudden, you know, if they're in punt formation, it's like, what? This is a gift.
Yep. Steelers have been doing this all season long. They've been making questionable decisions. Tomlin is not on the cutting edge of, you know, of analytics decisions. Baltimore got the ball at the 18 with 37 seconds left and two timeouts. This wasn't with no time left, you know, with no timeouts. They had two timeouts left and Justin Tucker. Like, they only had to get, 32 yards in to get to the 50-yard line, and that's reasonable, right? It would have been really hard in Baltimore, but not a non-zero percent chance for sure. So,
yeah, wet ball, 42 yards, even though that 37 seconds, not outrageous that they could do that with two timeouts.
Yeah, so it's just mind-boggling that they decided it, and of course the announcers thought it was fine and the right decision, but whatever. So, but the worst decision based off of win probability. So.
It should be mocked relentlessly. Mm-hmm. They have a list of most cowardly punts. I think they do every week. I'd have to be at the top of it because it's just one of the worst calls you've ever made. All right, back to the offensive line for a second. 1-6-6. Ben Cleveland allowed one pressure in the game. He made six out of six pull blocks in this game, which is good. He hadn't been making his pull opportunities consistently before this. And he had six highlight blocks, as I account for them. And I know this is my number. It's not from Next Gen or whatever, but it was the high for any Ravens offensive lineman in any game this season. So impressive, at least from that perspective. I hope he will enter 2022 as the presumptive starter at left guard. It is a somewhat crowded field, but it's been the last few years at left guard for the Ravens, not a particularly talented field. So they've had left guard competitions with the exception of really Bozeman taking it 1 year, I believe. They've had crowded left guard competitions without a ton of talent there.
Yeah, you know, that's awesome to see that Cleveland stepped up based on your analysis. That's such a you know, good sign going into it. You know, I think he really got hurt with missing time in the beginning of the season, you know, missed that opportunity and really struggled to kind of get his footing. So, to have him have the offseason building for next year, I think will be great.
Yeah, there's something you always hear about offensive line play, and I've heard that when they talk about the Super Bowl with the Hogs way back when, or whenever an offensive line's having a particularly great game, and there's an offensive lineman in the booth. So if you had Dan Dierdorf in the booth, he would always be the kind of guy who would bring this up because I can only tell you there's nothing as fun as dominating the line of scrimmage against an opponent, because it's like you're having a party every time you go back to the huddle. You know, you basically just smile and winking, and you know, then you go up and you get to hit the guy across from you again, and they're tired as hell and you're enjoying it. And during that game, after the consecutive 20-yard runs by Murray, which was on that drive that eventually ended in the interception, okay, it is 3 to 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Take a look at that if you still got the game on your DVR, and watch Cleveland coming back to the huddle and how much fun he's having dominating Cam Hayward in this game. That's a quality opponent,
right?
But did a good job against him.
That's awesome. Yeah, and one other thing I want to add is it's going to be big with Ben Powers, because he has a significantly increased contract, yes, due to the playing time. So $2.5 million. So I think that he's going to be someone to watch about possible cuts and to get salary space. So especially if Cleveland steps up for the leader in the pack for that role. So
does it make him a trade candidate as well? Because he's
Powers for sure. But he's still more expensive. So, you know, he would be easier to trade if he was just without that increased pay, but absolutely, if they can get anything for him, that's better than a cut.
So. Right.
All right. My next set of numbers is 8.44 and 3.66. It's the yards per target for Hollywood Brown when Lamar was QB versus when he wasn't. So 8.44 per target when he was QB, 3.66 when he wasn't. The number of components that came into this, with Lamar, the average air yards was 12.1 versus 9.5. So that's a significant difference right there. The completion percentage with Lamar is 67% versus 53% without it. So, you know, throwing deeper and more likely to complete the pass. So just kind of all around, missing Lamar really hurt Hollywood at the end of the season. And I think you could really see it in his play and his commitment to the game and his attitude. And I think it was really rough on him in the last couple of games. I think it's really big for Hollywood because his fifth-year option is coming up soon. They have to decide by May 3rd, is my understanding, and it would be it'd be $12.9 million based on where things currently stand for him, which is a pretty significant amount of money. And I think it's going to be a tough decision. I don't think it's a no-brainer. Bateman has actually outsnapped Hollywood Brown 3 out of the last 4 games. So, you know, with limited number of wide receiver snaps for the Ravens, I think it'll be interesting to see whether they want to pay that amount of money to Hollywood going forward.
Yeah, I think it's a risky thing. I think in the end they probably will do it for year 5 and then hope he has a big year and they could hope he has a big year in year 4 and let him walk after that. But it is a big risk, and you're absolutely right about this in terms of it's the difference between the quarterbacks. And part of the reason it's the difference between the quarterbacks is because Huntley, it does not have pocket awareness, and the Ravens are aware of it, and they don't have running backs who are threatening at all. Apologies to Latavius Murray for the last big game, but they really don't. And what that's meant is that they've had to scheme for his lack of pocket awareness with quick throws out. You know, the lack of tackles obviously is significant to this too, but they have to get rid of the ball quickly. And that's meant he's been running a lot of shorter patterns. And of course, when he runs underneath, he also is a guy who doesn't really seek to run through contact. He seeks to go down, and, you know, given his frame, it may be appropriate, but it's not the best place to make use of his talents. And he's been taken out of the meaningful part of the offense that he had.
Yep, definitely.
All right, let's see. What have I not done here so far? How about 22-1? 22 offensive snaps for Tyson Williams after week 7. He had two snaps and one carry in this last game. He's had 2 carries in the last 11 weeks despite 8 activations. Okay, 1 defensive snap for Malik Harrison after week 7 in 7 activations. He's been a special teams player. 1 equipment problem for Queen was the only reason he went in the game. You know, Williams was not cut all season, and the only reason that I can see for that is that the team wants him for 2022. You don't treat a player like this and keep him around if you want to if you don't think that he can help you the following season. I mean, if it were Tim Williams, as it was Tim Williams getting this kind of treatment a couple of years ago, they just cut the guy when they've had enough. You know, there's no future in the guy that cut him. With Tyson, I think it means they must see a future in him. And with Malik Harrison, you know, he's lost playing time to Christian Welch down the stretch. And that should really be telling him something about, you know, what's going on. But I think the other side of that is that, you know, the Ravens aren't going to get rid of Harrison because he's fairly early still on his rookie deal. But, you know, he's a guy that they're obviously not happy with what happened in Cleveland. However, he got himself in the situation, it's probably not fair to blame him entirely, but then players got to take accountability for all outcomes along their own decision tree. And that includes where you are at any point when something bad happens.
Yeah, I think, you know, both of them have been very interesting situations to watch this last season. Tyson Williams is definitely a head scratcher. You know, not playing him is one thing, but lack of supporting, you know, commentary from the coaching and things like that. You know, if he's someone you want to keep around for the future, I feel like a lot more positive, you know, coach speak around how much he's developing in practice or growing or whatever, you know, could build him. And I just didn't hear any of that. So it's just a very weird, weird situation for him. And I guess it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. I do think he'll be around next season due to the cheap. I think he's a exclusive rights free agent, I believe. And so he'll be around in the 90. And then we'll see what happens with the roster cuts. With Malik Harrison, I think it's pretty crazy. I don't know how much of it was health. I don't know how much of it of what it was related to. I know he has had some snaps as outside linebacker in that position. Do you think that's something he could look into more this offseason?
It's possible. And the Ravens are certainly light there. And, you know, that would be a reasonable switch of positions. But, you know, if the Ravens had times where they were light there this year, they had times where they only had three active. And those were times I thought he might get snaps, and he didn't. So most of his snaps came in a weird three inside, one outside linebacker package early in the season where he seemed to be playing on the outside. It's a little bit of a different animal. It's about four snaps in total. It wasn't a whole lot, but it's possible they could put him in as one of two.
Yeah, and maybe looking for a trade. I don't know if it didn't fit. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with both of them this offseason. It'll be a big offseason for both of them, I think. So, all right, my next number is 7,579. Speaking of a big offseason, that's the number of points based on the Fitzgerald Spielberger, I hope I pronounced that right, I don't know, draft calculation from the guys over at Over the Cap, and I think Spielberger is over at PFF, so, and he does some stuff at Over the Cap. I think he's been on your show a couple times. So it's a new kind of formula that they have, a little bit more weighted towards a number of picks versus as heavily weighted to the top Jimmy Johnson draft chart. But anyways, based on that, the Ravens have the seventh highest number of points of any team, behind only the Jets, Giants, Jaguars, Eagles, Denver, and Detroit. So that's pretty awesome. You know, 14th pick, but getting all the way up to 17th highest points due to the number of comp picks and coaching picks from Culley, and then some of the trades as well. So there are so many picks that, you know, the mock drafts are going to be fun this off season, and it is going to be a lot of fun to talk about everything going on. So,
yeah, first year post COVID too, we know that there's an extra, not maybe half a draft, but there's a lot of additional small school prospects who deferred their movement into the draft for a year. And that's frankly a lot of reason why the Ravens couldn't find running backs by their usual method. The one thing I wanted to ask you about Fitzgerald Spielberger, this is a flatter valuation. Yeah. Than JJ, because I think everything is. But where does it fit among the various valuation types for how flat that valuation is? I'm trying to wonder how much of that is in those value of those fourth round picks being a lot higher than other systems would say they are.
Oh, I think it's, I don't know for sure, but my guess is it's one of the flatter, the flattest. I don't know for sure, but based on everything I know about the work of the two guys, they would be on the newer edge of more picks, more, you know, more shots at getting someone good. So I'm guessing they love all those 5 fourth round picks or whatever the team has. So it's going to be wild for sure. So,
all right. Always a pleasure doing the show with you. We're going to try and come up with some reasons to do it during the off season.
Absolutely.
Bring numbers that are related to that. And Dan, tell people where they can find your work.
Yeah, you can reach out on Twitter, DP Reese, and then the number 8. Going to be looking into all this draft stuff. Going to be looking into how the team did over the last year. I'm sure I'll be shooting out a number of different models and studies that I do. But if you ever have a question that you wonder how the data, how the data whether backs it up or proves it otherwise, just reach out to me with your question, and I'd be happy to look into it. So.
Outstanding. Definitely a follow everybody should have is at DP Reese 8. Other folks out there, if you're looking to do one of two things, if you want to do a 25 years episode, I'll still get you in. Even though we're past and the 26th season has now occurred, we can just talk about those first 25 and be happy with that, because I don't think I want to talk about this season too much more anymore. We'll have positional reviews coming out very soon. We got people for all of those, but thanks for your offer, all the offers we're getting on that. We want to talk about the draft a lot in the coming months, and we're also looking for people who have specific narrow topics that relate to the Ravens. Franchise building topics are always good before the draft. Be happy to talk to you about them on a film study short. We'll be bringing that series back. Hit me up on Twitter. DMs are open, and always appreciate all your listens. Dan, we're doing a little bit of time on Garnett's Twitter Spaces, which has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. The first Twitter Space. I'd love to, a fun addition now out there on Twitter, and I'm looking forward to doing it more in the off season for sure.
Yeah. That'll be all kinds of fun anyway. A chance to just talk directly, and those answers that don't fit in 280 characters, you can spend a few more in a spoken word format like that. Dan, thanks again for doing the show with me all season.
Yeah, my pleasure.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study. We'll be right back.